Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lindenville, we are here when you need us.
It's time for Radio Vermont's News and Public Affairs program, Open Mic with Hester Fuller. The phone lines to speak with Hester are open at 802-244-1777 and toll-free 1-877-291-8255. And here's your host, Hester Fuller.
Thanks, Tom. Good to see you back again.
Nice to be back.
It feels like, you know, the ship is righted now.
Thank you.
Sitting in the seats we're supposed to be in.
High praise indeed. Thank you very much.
Glad to have you back. Yep, indeed, another Manic Monday morning. We'd like to know what's on your mind today as we sashay down the backside of August. What kind of things are you thinking about? What you been doing this week? Fair season's well underway now. I know we just wound up the Orleans County Fair, and we've just been hearing on the radio Caledonia's this week, and that means that next week is the great big one, the Champlain Valley Fair. You going to have stuff in there? Got some stuff you'd like to share with your neighbors? Why don't you call us up and tell us what you're going to enter? Tell us some fair stories. Did you meet someone important at the fair? Let us know. Vermont News, so all kinds of things been popping and hopping around here. Jasper Craven has a really good story this morning on Vermont Digger. I don't know if you saw it, Tom, about the Democrats reviving their push for universal background checks for firearm purchases this coming session. It'll be interesting. We have a call coming in already. David from California. Good morning.
Oh, yeah, morning, Hester. You know, I'm calling specifically because of an incident that is kind of tied to Burlington,
mm-hmm.
and I'm out in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and I understand in April of this year, you all had some stir up because his title, if I remember right, was the economic director of Burlington, and
The issue? Do you remember what the issue was?
Evicting a 100-year-old woman out here.
And Tom's
so he was forced to resign because he had taken part in it. His name was Peter Owens.
Peter Owens?
Yeah.
I'm sure some of my listeners may be more up on it than I am, but that is not a story that leaps into the forefront of my consciousness.
Okay, well, Burlington Community Economic and Development Office Director, mm-hmm. is what it was. And basically what's happened is there's a 100-year-old woman out here in San Francisco. And last Friday, she got the boot. She got evicted. A 100-year-old woman.
Now what?
And he owns the property with his brother and sister-in-law.
Really?
And he was an economic director, community and economics director. I'll find it again.
Well, I see that he did step down from his position,
right.
Back in May.
But I mean, if he was the director of your local economy,
mm-hmm.
in that kind of title,
mm-hmm.
and that's the sort of thing he was pushing. I mean, how much danger? You should probably review all the contracts this guy's had to do with.
Well, you know, I'm glad that it isn't my responsibility to do that, but I think it probably is something that someone has taken a look at. This is a little bit of an old story here.
Well, and no, perhaps she just got evicted.
No, actually, it's...
In April, she was under threat,
mm-hmm.
but on Friday, she got the boot.
She really did.
And so she's probably out as of last Friday.
Well, that doesn't seem right.
No, it's wicked.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... I mean, what's even more wicked, if you read the story from April, they were claiming that if she would just pay the legal fees, the legal bills of the landlord, she could stay.
Hmm.
And in April, it's $100,000. A 100-year-old woman is supposed to come up with $100,000 and she can stay.
Well, that seems to me like a fault of the system.
Well, then, by as of last Friday... It's $164,000.
Mm-hmm.
So they jacked $60,000 in a couple of months.
Well, that doesn't sound right. I will say that.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the kind of phone, and the judge fell for it. He didn't notice that they had racked up another $64,000 in legal bills in 2 months, 3 months.
Well, I have to tell you, you caught me off my horse on this one,
yeah.
because it's unfolding out in San Francisco, apparently, and hasn't been in the news here for a good 6 months. It's not necessarily... excuse, but it is an explanation of why I am flat-footed on this one. If
yeah,
our
well,
listeners are calling with something
to know
to,
about it personally. I'm
well,
just,
I, you know, before we start
town,
casting
it,
aspersions
I'm
around,
Paul Revere here.
Mm-hmm, I hear you.
And because think about if this guy would pull this kind of snake oil stuff distant miles away, what kind of contracts did he sign the region into?
Well, I think it's one thing I know for sure is these things don't happen by one person only. So,
sure. Yeah.
And we also have a pretty attentive press up that way. So I have a feeling that what needs to be aired will certainly get its airing.
Well, you know, a lot of counties are kind of hooked into the local redevelopment agencies.
I hear you.
And a bad contract goes a long way.
I hear you. Well, I think we are now put on notice.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Listen, well, David, thanks a lot for calling in all the way from across the country. Appreciate your interest and your efforts to put us on the alert to a story that you clearly believe is something that has a Vermont implication, and we are going to see what we find coming out after it. How about you all out there, other folks listening? What's on your mind this morning? Anybody want to weigh in on this story that we are just hearing the beginnings of, or at least I am, because you know how I count on you guys to keep me up to speed on a lot of this stuff, starting way, way back in the springtime. Other stories in the Vermont news that are interesting to you this week. We just mentioned the Democrats' efforts to revive a limited measured attempt at background checks on gun control, on gun purchases coming up in the coming session. What do you think about that? Hester Fuller is my name, and I'm here with Tom McLeod this morning. It's a Monday morning in late August. Fair season's well underway. Orleans County Fair last week, Caledonia coming up, and the Champlain Valley Fair just around the corner. That, of course, is often seen as the big one up in Chittenden County. You got plans to head up that way yourself, Tom?
Well, I haven't been up to the Champlain Valley Fair for a while. I like to go to they just had the Orleans, the Barton.
Yeah.
And I missed that one because, as I mentioned, I didn't feel well. But getting there, and of course, I love the Caledonia one. It's nice. Tunbridge Fair.
Tunbridge is a classic.
You know, I like the ones that like the Addison County Fair that have still a lot of the agriculture stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Champlain Valley Fair, when you hear that, to me, that's the kind of the last, summer really starting to go away. Once you get to Tunbridge, then you're really getting into fall, basically.
You know, Tunbridge, I have a lot of great memories of the Tunbridge Fair. I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, too. Stories. DEV's presence down at the Tunbridge Fair. WDEV has been a presence there broadcasting live, actually broadcast live from most of the fairs around the state at one time or another. And I can remember one year having the distinct honor of wearing a tuxedo to MC a tobacco spitting contest at the Tunbridge Fair.
Well, that's
second time I got
that?
To well, you know, well, I don't know. The only thing that came close was the second time I got to wear a tuxedo on behalf of this station, and that was to MC a wrestling match that took place at Harwood Union High School. That was a long time ago.
Wow,
it was a charity event.
Oh, that's great. No, let's go Tunbridge. I think there's the race, the WDEV, the horse race they have around the track, and I think my great grandfather has one named after him.
Wow,
racing the sulkies out there. And every now and then someone will say, are you? I'll mention who I am. I knew your great-grandfather. I mean, that was a big deal back in the day, all those different tracks before we've gone on to the world of stock car racing.
Well, back in the day, the farm was the big opportunity for folks to come out and visit with neighbors and see how people were doing and get together at a very busy time of year, but you could make your way down to the fairgrounds for a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
Show off your handiwork, show off your culinary skills, show off your horticultural skills.
And you had some success, a friend of yours.
Yeah, actually, Craftsbury was well represented up at the Barton Fair this week.
Good.
And a buddy of mine who is occasionally listening to this program, I don't mind saying, Skip Sador, picked up a few ribbons in Floral Hall this week. Love to hear from other listeners out here who've been participating in Vermont's wonderful tradition of the county fairs at the end of the season. How has that changed for you? How has the meaning of that changed? Or has it? Is it still what it used to be? The events the way you remember them? Champlain Valley, of course, is known for some wonderful musical performances that have happened over the years. This year, of course, will be no exception. We've got ZZ Top coming, I guess. Rascal Flatts, one of my favorite country bands.
You can listen to the getaway with Artie Levine to get some win some tickets to ZZ Top.
Excellent.
Georgia Satellites. I believe he's doing that throughout. The show is going to be August 27th, so he's doing that. I see a call coming in, so I'll duck out for a moment.
Okay, so he's going to duck over there and pick up the phone for us. What's on your mind this morning? Give us a call here at 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. It's a Vermont Monday morning. Had some weather over the weekend. Did you get rained out where you are? Did you get washed out? Or did you need the rain? Is it a good idea to have that great big downpour? I know we had a bit up where I live in the kingdom, and I imagine that others also got swamped. Nobody got it too bad. Oh, what do you know? One of our regulars, Rama from Williamstown. Good morning. What's on your mind this morning?
Good morning, Hester.
Good morning.
Things. Number one, I heard him mention the Cubs earlier today on DEV, so go Cubbies.
Absolutely.
Of course, my concern is that they actually might come down to where they're one out away from winning the World Series, which means we're going to be struck by a massive asteroid.
Oh, gosh. I'm a Boston fan. Been there, done that.
Well, you guys made it.
Yeah, we did, and there's no reason why the Cubbies can't either.
Well, because it would be the end of the world.
Well, I don't know. What a way to go, though, you know? Big smile on her face.
Hey, on the background checks thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hear this politicians in Vermont like to take this, I consider it a rather weaselly way out and say, oh, we don't have a problem here. And I won't argue that point one way or the other in this call. But we do have a problem in the United States of America with having way too many firearms of way too, just way too much power running around in this country, essentially unchecked. And we in Vermont are part of the United States of America. And, you know, we've had some pretty stupid laws like those that take away the duty for you to retreat before you claim self-defense. In other words, you can sit there and be aggressive with somebody, and if they react back to your aggression, you can say, oh, gosh, I feared for my life. That's why I shot and killed them. This is, you know, this has happened on numerous occasions throughout the country. And those have not been passed at a national level. Those have been passed on a state-by-state level. So it is important that state-by-state we weigh in with sensible laws when it comes to firearms and firearm safety in this country. So, you know, this weaselly answer, and, you know, I won't apply weasel on a personal level to folks like Phil Scott, because I don't think he is. I think that response is a weaselly response.
Well, wait a minute, though. You just finished saying that you thought that a state-by-state response to the problem that we recognize, whether we identify it as too many weapons or the wrong people having the weapons or what, state-by-state is appropriate. Why is it then inappropriate to say in Vermont the problem is not what it is elsewhere?
Well, no. What the thing is people like Phil Scott and all that want to say, oh, we don't have a problem here in Vermont, so we don't have to do anything. That's the weaselly answer, and that's the wrong answer, and that's the wrong way forward.
Well, if we don't have a problem, if you bought the premise that we didn't have a problem, why would we try to fix it?
Because we do have a problem.
Okay. How would you characterize the problem that we see here?
The problem we see here is we're part of the United States of America, which is overrun with firearms of that are basically unchecked. I mean, we have more firearms, personal firearms, running around this country than we have people.
So do you think the solution then is some sort of federal approach to this, or do you think that the states really should retain the say-so?
Well, I think unless the feds want to act, then there is a duty on the states to act for the welfare of its citizens.
Of the nation.
You know, period. And also at the federal level, as they're kind of tied up with that joke of a Supreme Court decision, the Heller case, which is, I mean, absolutely, if you want to read some good,
For listeners who aren't familiar with it, can you, a nutshell, put the Heller decision?
Well, that was from, what, 2004 or 5 or 8, it's somewhere in that area. I forget the exact year, but that's the case where essentially after a couple hundred years of saying that the federal Constitution did not include a guaranteed personal right to own, carry, and do whatever you want with a firearm, is the Supreme Court decided that right did indeed exist at a personal level, and that was based on the Second Amendment. And the Heller case, if you go back and folks read it, it's an absolute joke. I mean, out of two things that really stand out in that is the majority opinion they said that, well, the inclusion of the first part of the Second Amendment, that part about a well-regulated militia being necessary for the defense of a free state, doesn't really matter simply because they threw it in there. And that this is literally just about word for word what they said in their decision. And the second part is when you read the dissenting opinions, it becomes painfully clear that what the history that the majority opinion relied on for the wording for the Second Amendment relied on proposals to the U.S. Constitution, to those first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, that were proposed but rejected, instead of relying on the actual proposal that was accepted.
Which ones do you mean?
Well, there are some states where they mention specifically the right to bear arms in various words for self-defense and for hunting. Pennsylvania, Vermont are a couple of them, and there are some others that specifically mention that. There was some proposed wording that would have said that, you know, there was a right to have arms, weapons, and to bear arms for hunting and self-defense. But that was wording that was rejected. And instead, they put in the wording that a well-regulated militia being necessary for the defense of a free state, the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed.
I think the piece that they rejected out of hand was a section of the law that talked about carrying a pistol within the house, which amounted to a complete prohibition on using handguns legally for self-defense. And as a complete prohibition, they held it unconstitutional.
Except that the Heller decision has been used to remove, even at the federal level, restrictions on people carrying firearms in many other circumstances. So, no, it has not been limited, although the specific case was about a guy having an unlicensed firearm in his house.
Well, you know what, Rama? We're starting to get the calls stacked up, as you can probably imagine, whenever we take up gun control as a subject. So we're going to have to let some other folks have a bit of a turn. And thank you very much for calling in here. There is the question of the question that was before the court, and then there's the question of how it's interpreted, how things follow out thereafter, and, you know, whether one should be considered in the forming of the opinion on the other. Who knows? Bill from Barrie, you got to want to weigh in on this one?
Okay, for just a second, because
sure.
I wanted to call about something nice. But anyway...
Well, I'd like to hear something nice, too.
I'll give you the one statement that I have. Vermont and the states, and the places where guns laws are not the strictest, seem to have the lowest of the crime rates. And that's all I want to say about that subject, because I have something else I wanted to say.
What do you want to say?
Your first caller. He didn't answer one question I had, because the most important question is, what happened to that lady? Did some kind people, and I'm sure they did, take her in? I'm sure the community, and if I was in the community, I'd be involved, try to become involved in finding her a nice place to live.
Well, it's true, and I was trying to find that out while I was talking to him on the phone here. Thank heavens for the internet in the studio. All I could find out was, as he said, indeed, this week, she was actually dispossessed of her home, and there was no follow-up on what had become of her, at least none that I could put my finger on.
I think we'd like to know if we can find out. But that's not the only good thing I wanted to mention.
Okay.
There's been that crummy business at the Olympics with the swimmers.
Yeah.
And that was terrible. They were terrible. I played sports. I was in swimming, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the point was, I'm very disappointed in those swimmers.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to tell you, and I did say this to Mike, and I wanted you to bring it up more because I didn't say it enough. My heroes in that Olympics were the two runners, the two lady runners. It was a middle distance run. One of them fell.
Mm-hmm.
The American, she was from New Zealand. The American helped her up.
Mm-hmm.
Then she couldn't keep going, and the New Zealand lady helped her up, and they both finished the race.
I agree. I thought that was one of the most heartwarming stories of the entire 10 days of the games.
I don't know their names. I'm very sorry that I don't know their names.
Oh, and I did.
I think that their names should be brought up. I think that at least the American Olympic Committee should recognize both of those ladies.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Olympic Committee, the International, should recognize both those ladies and give them some kind of an honor for what they have done.
Well, I thought one thing that was great was the International Olympic Committee recognized what they had done and awarded each of them a place in the finals. Of course, the American was unable to take advantage of the placement because of the injury, but they were both admitted to the finals on account of
that display of sportsmanship.
The U.S. runner, I'm told, is D'Agostino, and she's from Dartmouth, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, a local kid. Awesome. And that was just handed to me through the door. And I'm scrambling here to have a coherent conversation with you, Bill, and find it on the internet. We're just going to have to give up one or the other. But thank you for bringing up some positive news. I'm glad to hear that. And I agree with you. I thought those two women were really one of the high points in the story that they, the narrative that they embody is a wonderful thing to be able to, you know, look back on as we look back on these games. You know, everybody was so worried about these games, worried about venues not being ready, worried about, you know, difficulties socially, community-wise, around the having of the games in an economically depressed place. And it all turned out fine. Turned out on a budget, turned out just fine. We know about doing just fine on a budget up here in Vermont, and I really enjoyed these games. Bill, thanks for calling. Fred from Newbury, you're on open mic.
All right. Hey, guess what's going to be the big issue in the next 3 or 4 years?
Oh, gosh, I wish I knew.
This is the big issue. Privacy is going to be a big issue.
You think so? Okay, tell me why you think that.
I know it's going to be a big issue. Here's the deal. If you write a letter to a friend, mm-hmm. and the only person that can read that letter is your friend, mm-hmm. do you think the Congress will take that right away from you?
Why would they want to?
Well, here's why they'd want to, because they want to be able to read your letter.
Why? My letter's important.
National security.
Well, you know what? They're going to be fishing a long time in my mail if they're going to find a threat to them.
Yeah, I know, but we're talking about everybody. So here's what the deal
Encryption.
Encryption is going to be a major issue. Major issue.
Well, it kind of already is, I think, don't you, Bill?
When we're talking about encryption, and we're not talking about encrypting devices. We're talking about encrypting messages.
Right, to be private.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So here's what the deal is. When you encrypt the message, the manipulating the program in the machine is not going to do any good. You've got to decode the encryption. Right. And the only way you can decode the encryption is with keys.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we have an encryption program out there called Signal.
Mm-hmm.
And Signal is very sophisticated. You can get it on the Internet. And from what I've read, the most powerful state economically, and that would be probably Texas or California or possibly New York, would not have the resources to be able to decrypt that message.
Well, then, so what you're saying then is we don't really have to worry too much about our privacy if these technologies are already within our grasp.
Yeah, but how about the Congress making a law against that?
Well,
in the name of national security.
Well, you know, if they do, good luck with that, I would say. It seems like folks are feeling it will do.
You know what happens in the name of security.
Hmm. Well, some things do happen, but I think if we're vigilant and we are keeping our own noses clean, we don't really have a whole lot to worry about there.
Right.
I know that that's not everybody's view, and I, you know, in a different mood, I might say something different myself. However, I'm not too worried right now. Fred of Newbury, thank you for thinking about these things that are threats to us, and I hope you will call in again when you put your finger on something else we really ought to be concerning ourselves with. Nils from Duxbury, you're on the air on open mic.
Yeah, good morning. I wanted to just go back to comments Rama made. I feel like I know the guy.
So do I.
A lot. And he's usually right on the mark, as far mm-hmm. as I can tell. Gun control is complicated.
Yeah.
I grew up hunting. I grew up eating the game I shot. I still own a gun. But when I was a kid, deer hunting with my dad, he had a bolt action 30-30. I think it held 4 in the clip,
mm-hmm.
maybe 1 in the chamber. So. And if you think about it, I mean, it was state-of-the-art at the time he bought it, which was probably in the middle 1950s. The thing I have a hard time with is, and I'm going to use the term that I prefer, and some people are going to argue with me that I use this term, assault weapons that, you know, have multi-round clips.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why don't I just... you know, if I'm in a deer hunt, why don't I just get a rocket launcher, you know, or some hand grenades, or mount a 50 caliber on the back of my truck and go out there? And I mean, when do we stop trying to defend weapons that have no business in the woods hunting?
Well, I guess I'm going to take the devil's advocate position,
Nils. That's my first point. My second point is, and I think Rama was trying to say this, and I'm going to say it in a different way. we don't need this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason the laws haven't gotten anywhere is primarily because of the gun lobby. You know, so it's money.
Mm-hmm.
And people die every day because Winchester and all these other big companies, you know, need to make a living selling weapons. And I, you know, like I said, I don't have anything against hunting. I do have something against killing. That's mm-hmm. all I'm going to say.
I hear you.
For your show.
I hear you. Well, thank you very much for calling in. And here's a question I'll put out there to folks who want to debate the business about where we draw the line on what kinds of weapons are okay. There's always a clamor about so-called assault weapons, automatic weapons with multi-round clips in them. And the question was just raised, like, where do we draw the line on what's okay? What, I mean, isn't there something beyond which we should not go? And I guess I would play devil's advocate on that question and ask, where would you, if you're going to start from the other end and go all the way back, at what point would you say it was okay, given that there is a constitutional right to keep and bear arms, and that it has been affirmed at the appeals court level and then underscored by the Supreme Court in the Heller decision we were talking about a little bit earlier, that self-defense and defense of the home are legitimate reasons to be to own a weapon. Interested in your thoughts about this complicated question, which may be arising again in light of new poll data, actually, taken Castleton, and I can't remember who the other party was, maybe UVM? No, it wasn't. Saying that the Vermonters appear as a large group to be more and more ready for things like judicious background checking or background checking and attached to more circumstances, more potential purchases than is currently the case under state law. Rich from Huntington, you're on open mic this morning.
Good morning. Just want to address a couple of these arguments.
Sure.
One being the what seems to be an easy sell of the universal background check is that you cannot enforce. You can pass the law, but it cannot be enforced without a universal registration system, and that means including all existing weapons held in private hands in Vermont would have to be registered in order to be able to tell when somebody has violated that law and made a private sale. And this is something that Sue Minter will not bring up. I've confronted her about it on the radio in several venues, and she just dances right over the question. Because, again, it's an easy sell to just say universal background checks and, say, common sense restrictions, but without explaining what that's going to involve.
Now, help me, educate me a little bit, Rich, because I'm not a firearm owner at the moment, although I've had so much trouble with foxes and coyotes this spring that I'm in this summer. I'm seriously thinking about something. Are guns not registered anyway? Don't they come with little numbers on them that bad guys would file off?
Sure, they have serial numbers, and they are registered for a limited amount of time. When you buy them from a dealer, you mm-hmm. have to fill out a form, and it has to undergo the scrutiny of a federal background check. That's been the law for years now, to make sure that you are not a convicted felon, you have not been adjudicated as a danger to yourself or others, and that you do not have a current conviction for domestic violence. Those are three disqualifiers to currently own, for anyone to own a weapon.
Or to purchase from a dealer, anyway.
To purchase from a dealer is checked preemptively. Now, we don't have too many laws that check you preemptively before you can engage in something. You go to buy an automobile, they don't check your driver's license.
No, you don't even need a license to buy a car.
No, you don't. So this, we have to realize that these gun laws right now are preemptory. Okay, they check ahead of time before you make the sale.
Mm-hmm.
The only time you're exempt from that is if you buy in a private sale, your next-door neighbor, somebody on Craigslist. But you, if you buy a gun and you are a prohibited person, you are still violating the law. It's just not checked ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And you're also, I take that your point is that there's no way to enforce it if we have no idea that, you know, specifics of such transactions have gone down.
If we pass the universal background law next year under, God forbid, Governor Minter, and let's say you get pulled over under suspicion of a crime, you're searched, a gun is found on you, there's no way of knowing when you bought that gun. And the law enforcement could say, well, we have no record of, you know, when did you buy this gun? And you could say, well, I bought it before the universal background check law. There's no way to verify that
mm-hmm.
unless every gun held in private hands currently has the serial number registered with the state.
Mm-hmm.
And as anyone knows, registration is the first step toward confiscation.
Well, it's probably true that you cannot confiscate without a registration, but I don't know that it necessarily would follow that. Owning one, you could say that owning a gun would be the first step toward having it taken away from you.
But in all the countries where confiscation has taken place,
right. It
has been done first by registering guns, going back to Nazi Germany or more recently in Australia and the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other point I wanted to make, this is just the background check business, which, again, is being very deceptively sold to Vermonters. Is this question you're bringing up about magazine capacity. Now, it's already perfectly legal to possess a semi-automatic gun. Now, it's the other thing that's being chiseled away at is what kind of capacity for ammunition can the gun have in a removable magazine? And there are a lot of people saying that there is no reason for a private citizen to have a gun that can fire 30 rounds without changing clips. And I can say, well, since the dawn of Vermont's junkie apocalypse, there have been several instances of home invasions perpetrated by multiple individuals. And I can tell you this, if I hear my door being kicked down in the middle of the night, there was one case in St. Albans a couple of years ago where five people went into a person's apartment and accosted him. Just recently, six, 8 months ago, there was an elderly guy, about 65, who had three people come into his apartment and beat the bloody snot out of him and put him in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Those are perfectly legitimate reasons to have a 30-round clip, I can tell you that.
Well, you know, it sounds different from the Vermont that I moved to, 40 years ago, that you have to worry about that kind of thing. I'd love to know what other people say about that and how they respond to that. One question I also would have for you, Rich, what do you think about this idea that rules at the state level, laws at the state level, aren't going to begin to help the national problem, that there really needs to be some kind of nationally scoped effort?
Well, we do currently have a strong set of national laws. They're not being enforced by Obama's administration. They haven't been ever since he's been president. I think that's deliberate because he wants to see this kind of mayhem, which would then require additional laws. If we were to enforce the existing federal laws and the ones that I already stated about prohibiting the possession of guns by convicted felons and by those adjudicated as mentally defective, every time somebody comes under the scrutiny of law enforcement and they're found to be in possession of a gun as a prohibited person, we have the provision to put them away for 5 years, 10 years, in some cases 20 years. They are not being enforced. Now, as much as a lot of people will make the arguments that even Governor Shumlin says we have to have a 50-state solution because guns can pass across state lines.
I hear you. Now, you've given us lots to think about. We do have to pay some bills around here, and I'm getting a nod from the other side of the glass that this is a good time to do that. So, Rich, thank you very much for calling. Hope you'll stay tuned, and hope you will call us again if you hear other issues that are of concern to you aired on Open Mic. Right now, though, we're going to pause and have a few messages, and we'll be back on the other side with Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic here on WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name, and we're with you until 11 o'clock this morning when Bill Sayre will join us, as he always does, on weekday mornings at 11 o'clock. Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute. Today, Bill's guest will be Chris Barbieri, and they'll be talking about what happens in China and how it affects the economy and the politics and the environment we experience here in America and specifically in Vermont. That's today. China, the economy, politics, and environment in Vermont. Chris Barbieri and Bill Sayre together on Common Sense Radio at 11 o'clock this morning, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute. Our number here is 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. Jean from Barrie, you're on the air.
Good morning. A nice, cool morning.
I know. It is kind of nice.
Oh, I love this weather.
Well, I like the heat, I have to tell you. But
I'm talking about the gun, the new gun laws.
What do you think?
I don't pay much attention when the state every time wants to pass another law because people are going to obey it and some aren't.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They passed here not too long ago, don't text and drive. Has that stopped people?
Really?
No.
Mm-hmm.
And what about these drugs? You probably heard, not this last weekend, but the weekend mm-hmm. before, 8 out of 9 people were right here from where I live in Barrie City.
Yep.
If they hadn't been the police to save them, they would have been gone.
They would have been, and that was a big spike because I understand in the statewide it's like one or two a week.
They didn't pass the marijuana thing here because the only reason the state wants to pass like something like that is for taxes. Mm. We know that, right?
Well, I know that a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, but they can pass all the law. I keep telling people they can pass all the laws they want. The next thing is the people to obey them.
Well, what do you think the solution is?
Why do we? Boy, our prisons are pretty well filled with people. Mm-hmm. They don't obey the law.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think the solution is then? If passing more laws isn't going to take care of the problem, what can we do?
I don't know, because people are going to do what they want to do.
Well, that is, yeah,
they're not going to pay attention. Some of them will, you know, they're obeying the laws, yes. But there's a law that, you know, they and you hear sometimes some say, I don't care what law they pass. I'm going to do what I want to do.
Mm. It's a worry. And it just seems that, I think when you put a lot of people together in close confinements, like in cities,
and I feel sorry for the poor children and stuff, you know, and these young ones taking these drugs. And it said, one woman, it said there, this was the third time, 19 years old, the third time she's been like could have been overdosed, and they saved her. You know, your luck runs out after a while with this stuff. You know,
well, there's no question. There's a lot of tragedy and heartbreak, and it attaches to families, whole families, and kids.
But another thing about Hillary, Trump keeps bringing up about her email. That's all he has on her, isn't it?
Well, it seems
And how can they have her? Republican want her to give her 30 days to fill out some more paper things. You know.
Oh yeah.
They said it's illegal what you're probably trying to do because this has already been settled.
Well, it has been. They've had her under investigation for several years now, and no one's come up with anything. And I also understand that there's a little bit of a kerfuffle over the leakings of some of the contents of the emails, which are to media, which apparently has been done by some Republicans, and that amounts to a federal offense to leak anything that's marked classified. So
I don't know. They've already solved that figure. Mm-hmm. You figured. So you got to keep bringing it up because that's the only thing you can think of.
Well, I'll be glad when I'll be glad when this is all ended. Won't you come November?
Oh, me too. But he's the goody-goody, you know. He's trying to be all soft and change. But the leopards don't change their spots.
No, I think you're right about that, too. Oy, 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 Gene. I don't know.
I don't want to pay any attention to this.
Well, that's why I like to talk about things like the fair and local gun rules and whatnot.
I tell people, no. Forget it.
Let me just ask you one thing, and we have been on the gun control business, and I'm just always curious, and you seem to have a very common sense view about this. What do you think about the idea that state-level fiddling with regulations or whatever isn't going to solve the problem because the problem is national? People travel, people pick up guns in one place and take them to another. What do you think about that?
Well, they are. People are getting guns that shouldn't have them anyway, right?
Mm. It sure seems that
way. They're going to get them, your black market, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
If they want a gun, they're going to get it.
They're going to get one.
That's right.
And so we've got the problem just needs to be addressed at a different level somehow.
They're going to have to do something. Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking where they home invasions right here in our own state and stuff.
Well, you know what I'm thinking is that I think we're foolish to wait around for the government to ride in on a white horse and save us. It always comes down to you and me, doesn't it? It always comes down to us and our community and keeping an eye out for each other.
I'm in my 80s, so I've seen a lot of this through the years.
Sure.
Nothing surprises me anymore.
I know, but boy, oh boy, do you see any kind of solution on the horizon?
Oh, I feel so sorry for our children that are growing up.
It's tough. Well, they're going to muddle through just like we've muddled through.
They're going to have it a real problem. It's too bad.
You know, our parents said the same thing for us, too.
Yeah, that's right.
So I guess we've just been on a downhill slide and we've gotten good at it.
Well, you have a good day.
You too, Gene. I always love it when you call, so thanks, and do call again.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're listening to Open Mic, and it's about 12 minutes in front of 10 o'clock, at which time we are going to have a little bit of a news break. And then following that, we will zip down to the basement of the White House, where Victoria Jones will be sitting up against the frost wall with a microphone in her hand and ready to tell us what's happening down there. That'll be entertaining and fun. What's on your mind this morning? Give us a call, 244-1777, or toll-free, 1-877-291-8255 is the toll-free number. What do you think about the issues of the day? We've been talking about gun control. Also in the news this week, Vermont Health Connect, I guess they've announced that they've done a little study of themselves and discovered that they have improved somewhat. You know, if you read farther down in the story, you'll see that they are still getting calls from people who are absolutely irate, still waiting for months for things to get fixed. And they also want you to know that their list of backlogged complaints is down to a mere 1,500, which is, I guess, a third of what it was at the beginning of the summer, something like that. What should we do about that? What ought to happen with that Health Connect system? Should we just totally scrap the system we've got and go back to what we had before, if we can? Should Vermont buy into a federal system? I think at least one of our gubernatorial candidates, Mr. Scott, is interested in exploring that possibility. Should we spend more money tweaking what we've got? Why do we get into this pickle in the first place? I mean, we live in an era when Amazon.com and PayPal and all those kinds of online selling monetary exchange systems are totally mature and seem to have no trouble, you know, extracting our money from our pockets and putting back into our front yards parcels via UPS that have the things that we wanted and that we ordered in them. Why can't an online system to manage our health care insurance purchases and changes and things like that be executed in the state of Vermont? Why didn't that happen when there's so much of that talent floating around now? Should we be tweaking what we've got? Should we scrap it entirely? Should we look to a federal system? Does your view depend on the experience you've had with Vermont Health Connect? Give us a call. Let us know what you think about that issue. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. You got a look on your face like you need to tell me something. What's up?
No.
Oh, you
said. Sorry about that. Maybe it's just okay. Me looking at Monday and looking puzzled. I'm puzzled. 57 degrees, as Gene mentioned. A cool one this morning already, and only supposed to be about 70 today, but takes out some of that humidity.
Yeah, it does. And then tomorrow it's going to get back up and warm. I have to tell you, though, I may be the last person in the state of Vermont. Well, I know at least one other person who absolutely loves the heat. Just loves the heat.
Well, what about the humidity, though? You like the humidity?
Doesn't
too?
Bother me. Wow. Does not bother me. I could lie out in the sunshine. I could work in the barn all day long and just be, you know, a walking fountain because it's so warm, and just plain love it. Jump in the shower, go down to my Dunkin' Hole in the brook, and feel like $1 million.
Well, see, that helps. So some people can't get away from it. Of course, then if you're in a more urban environment, it really gets.
Well, it's true, and if it's like, you know, having garlic for supper. If everybody doesn't have it, then it becomes a problem, you know, when one person does. So who knows?
Very good.
Looking forward to a return of the heat, though.
Well, I guess it's coming back. Let's see.
Wednesday.
Tomorrow, sunny is mid-70s. Wednesday, 80 to 85. And then Friday, low 80s. And, well, wait, you know, weekend's a ways away. It does change, even though Roger's very good at being on top of this.
Yeah, he is. He is indeed. I used to have this fantasy that my bones were literally turning into gold inside my arms when the heat was beating down on them. I just plain loved the heat that much.
Wow.
It's just splendid.
Oh, that's good.
It is good.
I tend to melt.
You melt instead.
Yeah, nah, I don't do well with it. I don't mind, though, because after, you know, in January, everyone's like, it's too cold.
Well, you know, I like it because any excuse for a creamy for me, you know.
Although maple creamy, maybe?
Well, I was on the road yesterday, and, of course, I passed a creamy place and had to pull in because it was one I hadn't tried before, and I like to keep up on, you know, creamy places
absolutely.
Around the state.
Sure.
And got myself my summertime favorite. This summer, it's chocolate with a chocolate dip. You ever had that?
Oh, yeah. That's
double whammy.
Really good. Oh, sure.
Yeah, but Mr. Man, that thing melted just looking at it. I got about, I don't know, 150 yards down the road with this ice cream cone.
Should have got the cup.
Well, no.
It's not the same, I know, but if it's that hot.
Well, I ended up having to pull over and just kind of deal with it and eat it much quicker than I wanted to because it was just between the heat and the humidity. And the chocolate crusty thing, you know, that goes on the outside just kind of like would scoop up pieces of the ice cream and the whole thing just kind of kept sliding down my hand. So.
It's a nice problem to have, though.
It was a great problem to have. And don't get me wrong, I am absolutely not complaining. It was fabulous.
I guess it's been good for this humidity has been good for like the berry crop, blueberries.
Oh, tremendous.
Strawberries back in the
just
day. Of course,
tremendous.
Now we're coming up on apples. It'll be interesting how that works out.
Yeah, it will be. But I'll tell you, Brown's Beautiful Blueberries up in Craftsbury, I don't mind putting a plug in for them. But those blueberries are just outstanding and tremendous. I was up there again, I guess, Saturday afternoon, and the whole hillside is blue. In fact, he's lowered his prices up that way because they're just so much in the way of blueberries ripe and ready for the picking. Of course, that was Saturday. And who knows, maybe there were swarms of folks, you know, swooping in. Over Sunday, maybe even this morning.
So good news. People cutting hay now. That next cut, seeing more and more fields. Some that they've just waited. Maybe they're decorative. Everybody seems to be getting in on it right now.
Yeah, it's great. Well, I'm glad because this is the time my alpaca hay gets cut. They get their second cut.
We've got to keep them happy.
We certainly do. And we should keep the folks who keep our lights on happy
oh,
as
yes.
well. It's about 5 minutes of 10. Let's stop for a second and do a little business here on WDEV. Good morning and welcome back. This is Open Mic on WDEV AM 550, celebrating 85 years on the air with wonderful, wonderful radio. And my name is Hester Fuller. I'm here with Tom McLeod this morning, and we're hosting Open Mic. We'd love to hear from you, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we have a bit of a news break, followed by a visit with our friend Victoria Jones down at Talk Media News down in Washington, D.C., and then we'll be back with more of your opinions. There, I covered the business, Tom.
There, very good.
And so did you. We'd love to know what's on your mind this morning. We've been talking about gun control today. We just raised the question of Vermont Health Connect and what ought to happen with that. Advice you'd give to our incoming administrations come fall? Let us know what you think. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255 is the phone number.
Sounds like a plan. So we were talking earlier about the fairs. Oh, hey, we got a call. Let me get that real
quick. Okay. Yeah, that's the other thing we've been chatting about. We've been talking about the fairs. We had the Orleans Fair last week, Caledonia coming up this week, and then the big one, the Champlain Valley Fair, getting underway, I think, this weekend, right? And I wonder who's out there who's got something going at any of those fairs. Sure love to hear from you. 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. We have a caller in Middlesex. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Laura from Middlesex.
Hi, Lois. What's
up? And I was wondering if you could tell me, it's not too important, but I understand that Bill Spaceman Lee is running for governor of the state of Vermont with the Libertarian Party.
Well, I don't know if it's the Libertarian. Maybe it is. I just saw him. He lives in my town. He's a buddy of mine.
That's why I wanted to talk to you. Have you seen any signs about him running, or is he making not just...
Well, I know he's running.
A quiet campaign?
Well, it must be sort of quiet, but if it is, it's like the only thing he does that's quiet. Can't tell you. Let's see.
I would think he would be quite well known around the Red Sox Nation.
I would think so, too. Well, you know, this isn't his first...
area from his baseball days and... No, I think he seems like a very likable person.
He's a very likable person. He's a very good guy. He really is.
Yes.
We love him up in the Northeast Kingdom.
You know, for organizations and things like that. I think he'd make a great governor.
Well, you know what? He's a winner. He really is. And he's a player. He gets out there. He's still pitching, you know.
Yes.
He travels all over the country.
He had some nice articles in the Free Press on him.
Sure. And 7 Days actually has a...
I just think he seems like a character.
Well, he is a character, and he's a good fellow, and we value him up in our town. He's a great town member. He does all kinds of stuff for folks in town and for the organizations that are doing good works in the town. He's always one to run and grab a baseball and get some of his buddies from the Red Sox to sign it up so an organization can auction it off.
I think he has a lot of recommendable qualities, you know?
I think so, too. What do you think about his experience? How do you think his experiences would...
I know that he doesn't have, government political experience, so I guess that would be,
would that be a plus?
Favor.
Would that...
I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe if he, did a little more campaigning and people got to know him a little better. I mean, out of the kingdom...
Yeah,
I'm from Hardwick, so I know the kingdom very well.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Hardwick Academy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody in the kingdom knows everybody.
That's for sure. Well, listen, Lois, I will pass that word. I imagine I will be running into him because I seem to run into him an awful lot. We are looking at 30 seconds, though, before news time, so I'm going to have to let you go, but I will encourage you, please call us again when you hear something or have a question about things that are going on. Right now, though, I want to remind folks you are listening to WDEV AM 550 broadcasting out of Waterbury, Vermont, also 96.1 FM from the top of Sugarbush and broadcasting from downtown Barrie at 96.5. Also over the independently owned airwaves in Island Pond at 101.9 FM. Good morning. Welcome back. It's Open Mic on WDEV for another hour here. I'm Hester Fuller. I'm your host. Right now, though, we're going to cut away to our friends at Talk Media News. Justin's on the line this morning. Good morning, Justin. Where are you calling from?
Hey, good morning. I am calling from D.C. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. What's the big news down there today?
Well, of course, we have another day. So, of course, another day dominated by a lot of attention being paid to Donald Trump's campaign. This time, this is being focused on the comments that were made yesterday by Kellyanne Conway, the new campaign manager for the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
She essentially said on a Sunday show on ABC that the plan to deport 11 million undocumented immigrants is now suddenly TBA, to be announced, to be decided. She is saying that she is not going to be confirming the initial plan for mass deportations, saying that that's something that's still now being discussed, which is being interpreted as a pretty significant turnaround for the Trump campaign, who has had a pretty unwavering hardline stance when it comes to immigration for quite some time now.
Well, it sounds like an interesting new take on how to manage his campaign as well, this backpedaling walking back this pledge of his. Kellyanne Conway has sort of a reputation for handling Donald Trump in a sort of diplomatic fashion, does she not?
She does, yeah. This is actually a pretty interesting addition to the team, and one that raised some eyebrows initially, along with the appointment of Steve Bannon from Breitbart News.
Mm-hmm.
There was some speculation that this was essentially going to be letting Trump be Trump, allowing him to go off script. But as a result, we've actually seen the exact opposite to a large extent.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen him start to rely more on the teleprompter. We started to see him start to moderate his stance when it comes to issues like immigration, as we're talking about today, and also do the much-needed voter outreach, something that he had been pretty reluctant to do previously with the new sort of message oriented toward African-American voters. So a pretty significant shakeup, to say the least, one that has actually benefited Trump from most observers' accounts.
Well, let's talk a bit about that, quote, voter outreach, unquote. I mean, the speech that he gave where he made his pitch to African-American voters, essentially saying, what do you have to lose, has been roundly and widely criticized as just showing yet once again that he's completely, you know, off the fence on that one.
No, certainly. I mean, these remarks were not necessarily the nuance that a lot of people were looking for, but you also have to remember that this is a candidate who a lot of people just kind of have low expectations for, and, you know, that's something that kind of benefits him in the long run. There was sort of this acceptance at a certain point that he was not going to be making any sort of attempt at this, that he was going to essentially just try to double down on his base. And the fact that he actually is coming out and doing, you know, speeches that are targeted for the goal of extending the electorate, that is, you know, pretty significant. You can't really play that down, even if, as you mentioned, it is something that has been interpreted as pretty tone deaf, to say the least. So, you know, I think
inaccurate.
That we're going to continue to see him focus on, something that, you know, we just probably could not have imagined just 1 week ago.
Well, I think it probably depends on how people view the tenor and content of his remarks. I would go a little bit farther than saying tone deaf. I mean, he continues to spread absolutely untrue stereotypes about people, and then wonders why they won't have anything to do with him.
No, that's a very good point as well. And also, you know, if we're going to be frank about this, you know, the outreach that he's doing right now is not necessarily directed solely towards, you know, African-American voters. This is largely a way to extend or to expand his base among the Republican Party, something that he needs to do as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a lot of people, of course, obviously opposed to Donald Trump, you know, because he is somebody who makes outrageous statements, somebody who picks on racial groups, somebody who has, you know, just made some terrifying remarks about Gold Star families and whatnot. And this is essentially, I guess, to a large extent, being interpreted as cover for average Americans. They can now you know, claim that this isn't a candidate who engages in racist rhetoric because of this reason. That's sort of the cynical, accurate statement for what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of what you actually need, if the goal is to try to, you know, bring in the rest of the party, to try to show Republican leaders that you can be serious, you know, even a cosmetic fix like that can actually get that message across.
Yeah, until you step back three steps and realize that we're looking at, you know, how many months from the general election, and he's still trying to persuade his own party that he's the right guy to have chosen for the job.
Which is actually, you know, kind of a larger trend, and one that, you know, just isn't really talked about this much, that we have an election coming up in 90 days, and we continue to have some lingering questions. Going back to the immigration point, he mm-hmm. said that this was, you know, to be determined. Every policy speech he's been giving, you know, that's been saying he's unveiling issues and whatnot, hasn't really been an unveiling. He said that within the coming weeks we will announce further specifics. Those specifics still haven't come, so it really just kind of raises the question of whether or not we're actually going to be seeing a lot of the things that are continuing to be promised in this campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I think you put your finger on what I think is his one strength going into these last 90 days, and that is expectations are so low that possibly anything that comes out of his mouth might look better than we might have expected.
Yeah, and that's something that certainly has benefited politicians in the past, particularly when it comes to debate performances. If you look at the last couple of examples, Sarah Palin, benefited against her debate with Biden by the sole fact that she didn't, have an onstage meltdown. Mm-hmm. Mitt Romney benefited against Obama during his first debate by the sole, chance that people were expecting him to be sort of the stiff and inarticulate Mitt Romney that people had seen on the campaign trail. So, going into the debate season, it's particularly worth noting that he does have low expectations, and that's something that has historically changed the way that people view certain events.
Now, I have to ask you one more question, Justin. Out here in the boonies, one of the other aspects of this whole race that seems to percolate into our media are that the Trump who is the candidate and the Trump who is the person are a couple of different guys at this point. That Trump, the actual person, is quite nervous, quite worried, quite bewildered by the way people seem to have turned on him. Is that anything that gets discussion down where you are, where people are sort of closer to the situation?
Yeah, it is. And, there's a lot of reports that are coming out, from within the campaign that seem to indicate that exactly. Apparently, the ouster of Paul Manafort was based largely on a New York Times article that was talking about the discord and chaos that was taking place within his campaign. Mm. And that was something that, very obviously got under Donald Trump's skin. Mm-hmm. After that article came out, he went on sort of a tweet storm attacking the New York Times, which is kind of interesting. It was an article saying about how easy things get under his skin, and then he kind of gave a very real-time, very public display of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, this the idea of Trump as a person is absolutely unavoidable in this campaign, something that's going to be coming up time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
And, something that's been acknowledged by a lot of his close supporters, this ongoing refrain that, Trump is Trump and can't be controlled in any other circumstance would, certainly raise some red flags, if not for the fact that, again, we have a candidate with much different expectations.
Mm-hmm. Well, it raised some red flags for me, too, considering the job as leader of the free world. But we'll just have to see how that all plays out in 90 days or so. Justin, thanks so much for calling in, and we really appreciate hearing from Talk Media News. It's a good to have some direct info from the heart of all these matters. So thank you very much for calling.
Thank you so much. You have a good one.
Folks, you are listening to Open Mic here on WDEV News Radio. The time is about 10:15, and we have some time to... Oh, we do. We're going to stop for a minute and do a couple more messages, and then we'll be right back. Give us a call, if you would, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. We'll put you on the air on Open Mic. Good morning and welcome back to Open Mic on WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name. Tom McLeod and I are here taking your phone calls 244-1777 or toll free 1-877-291-8255. Open Mic is really wide open today, and we're taking calls from listeners about the things you want to talk about, whatever that might be. We've hit on gun control this morning, tried to ask a few questions about Vermont Health Connect. That one didn't really have what you might call legs. But if anybody has a view on that, sure like to hear from you. Give us a call, 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Story in the Associated Press this weekend that probably is of concern to a number of folks out here who have any truck with the maple industry. Apparently, an annual aerial flight made over the White Mountain National Forest shows in New Hampshire at least some problems with both white pines and sugar maple trees, about 39,000 acres of damage, according to the AP, showing white pine discoloration caused by... there's a kind of, the needles look yellow and brown when they ought to be more green this time of year, I guess. And also evidence of fungus damage exacerbated by some wet spring weather. Forest tent caterpillars are wreaking havoc, too, and we've certainly seen those up here in Vermont, some 15,000 acres affected in the state of New Hampshire, and it's showing up. I don't know. Have you got that happening where you are? Report in. Tell us how's the woods looking this year where you are. Open mic phone numbers 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Hey, Rob from North Carolina. Nice to hear from you again. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Hester?
I'm good.
Say, Donald Trump, the story is yet to be told.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things that can happen between now and November when we vote. And I'm wondering, when Colin Powell comes out and begins to criticize Hillary Clinton on her emails, I think even that has to redirect the liberal media's attention toward those emails again, because Colin says he doesn't want that to be pinned on him. You've read this account, haven't you? Or seen it on television?
I've certainly read that he and just about all his predecessors have used something other than just the official server on occasion.
Well, yeah, and the main difference, the real difference, is that he never used a private server, and she did.
Well, what qualifies as a private server?
A server that's not controlled and maintained by the government, by the State Department.
Mm.
Hers is maintained by, I don't know. This guy was asked to testify, and he hasn't yet. He, I guess, essentially pleaded the fifth or whatever they do.
So what is Colin Powell's remark? Are we losing you there?
No, I'm right here.
Oh, okay, good. Sounded like you were fading away there for a second. What is this leading you to think about?
It's leading me to think about that she has been less than truthful about emails. I mean, besides, he never used a private server. The State Department wasn't as sensitive to emailing and the internet back in Powell's time.
And, mm-hmm.
and he also went on to say that he never remembers a conversation with her that she says that she had advised him to use a private server.
Well, I'm going to have to go look for that, because that's a piece of coverage I have not yet stumbled across. I appreciate
it. Yeah, it was all over Morning Joe this morning. And
well, you know, Morning Joe happens while I'm here, so.
Oh, you know, tape it. You know.
No, then I'd have to watch the tapes, dude.
Well, you got to do it. It's a great show.
Well, I got a few other things I got to do, too.
If you want to get some really hard-hitting against Trump, they open up every morning now for the last couple of 3 weeks. Ever since he so-called attacked the Gold Star family, the Khans, they've been kind of down on him. But you know, Powell, when he was in the office, he used an office desktop for all his classified communication, his office computer, private, not in her home somewhere.
Well, you know, it certainly bears some scrutiny, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure does.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. Thank you for that input, and we'll have to keep our eyes peeled for that story. You are tuned to WDEV News Radio. This is Open Mic, and we're on the air until 11 o'clock this morning, at which time Bill Sayre will be in, as he is every weekday morning at 11. Today, the question is, how does what happens in China affect our economy, our politics, or our environment here in the United States and in Vermont in specific? Chris Barbieri will be here with Bill Sayre, and they'll be talking about this on Common Sense Radio, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute. So tune in. That'll be at 11 o'clock this morning on WDEV, right after the news that follows the open mic program. Right now, we'd love to hear from you, 244-1777, or toll-free, 1-877-291-8255. We're coming down the tail end of summer here. Oh, people don't like me to say that, I'm sure, but, you know, we just got to square off and face reality, folks. Fair season is upon us. Orleans County Fair was this weekend. Caledonia gets underway tomorrow, I think, or the next day.
Wednesday.
Thank you very much. I'm losing track of my days here. And then, of course, the big one, the Champlain Valley Fair, kicks off this weekend for, is it 10 days, 11 days?
I believe that starts, I think it's the 26th.
Yeah. And then we have Tunbridge coming up and Eastern States for those who are heading down that way. It's amazing. It really is. You know, Eastern States in particular, because it's the way the fairgrounds are set up there in West Springfield with the Avenue of the States. It's almost like that movie Brigadoon. You know, that little town that pops into existence for a few days and then disappears for centuries. Only it disappears just for a little bit, just for a year. If you're heading out to the fairs, tell us what you're hoping to see. Give us a call here at 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. other news in the news, other stories in the news this week. There's an interesting spin now being placed on who actually has to pay for public protest against things that, say, utilities are doing. I don't know if you saw the Free Press yesterday. Public Service Department sends message about dissenters was the headline. But basically, the spin that's being – this is all revolving around protests against the Addison Natural Gas Pipeline project. Work has been disrupted by folks who really take issue with that project. Three times since January, according to the paper, and at least two recorded right-of-way issues causing delays, according to the Free Press article, which was written by Nicole Higgins-Desmet. It's in Sunday's paper, I think it is. And the spin that's being placed on this now, the commissioner for Vermont's Department of Public Service, Chris Rechia, is pointing out that ratepayers are the ones who are picking up the tab here. Now, this isn't exactly news, I don't think, but it is interesting to put that spin on it. I think most everybody figures that ratepayers pick up the cost for pretty much anything. What's going on here? Why are we pitting the ratepayers against the protesters, both differing sets of public actors? What's going on with that? It isn't news that ratepayers pick up the tab, and yet it's being turned into something that we are asked to call our attention to. What's behind that? Give us a call at 244-1777, 1-877-291-8255. Ruth from Sheldon, how are you this week?
I'm great. I'm real happy with the weather we've had this summer.
Uh-huh.
And I think my garden is doing terrific.
Oh, how are your tomatoes?
Oh, they're wonderful.
Mine too.
But for some reason, I got a whole bunch of cherry tomatoes, which I didn't think I planted. So apparently they were labeled wrong when I bought them from the garden center.
Boy.
But anyways, I've got a lot of cherry tomatoes. This morning, I'm fermenting carrots.
Really?
Now, you had a show on fermentation.
Sure, yeah. Sandra Katz was on not too long ago.
Right. I was listening to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I started fermenting last summer, and I really like it.
Now, what do the carrots taste like? I mean, I think of, you know, you think of the classic thing is that fermented, or I call it weaponized cabbage called kimchi. But when you ferment carrots, what does it end up tasting like?
The color in the carrots remains.
Mm-hmm.
So your carrots are nice, bright, and orange. They taste just like regular carrots. I mean, when you grate a carrot.
Mm-hmm.
What I did with my fermented carrots is I used them for coleslaw,
mm-hmm.
or we just ate them as a carrot salad.
Yeah.
So they don't change a whole lot, but they do have a little tarty taste, a little, I put lemon juice in mine.
Oh, boy, that sounds yummy.
And it recommends ginger, but I don't like spices, so
yeah.
I just keep mine plain. And I'm very, very happy with the result.
Well, I think
and
that's terrific.
They're beautiful.
So what are you using them in the coleslaw and the salads like you would use them?
Yep.
That sounds tremendous.
Or just eat them. We ate them all winter long. They last forever. You pack them after you've grated them. You pack them into jars. And you can put an awful lot of carrots into a quart jar.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how many carrots you can put in.
So you
but
stuff
them. They last a long time because when you're serving them, you take out a big spoonful, and it hardly takes anything out of the jar.
Mm. So you pack them in, and then you pour something that has lemon juice in it. What else? I mean,
no, I just salt and lemon juice is the only thing that's in it.
Okay.
And after you grate them, you let them sit for a while and you massage them
uh-huh.
so that the juices will come out of the carrot.
Wow.
And when you get enough juice to cover the carrots in the jar, you've got enough.
Wow.
Well, anyways.
So, well, that sounds pretty special. As for those cherry tomatoes, you don't think you might have dropped one, you know, when you were out in the garden, like you were eating a sandwich that had a cherry tomato and just sort of like dropped one and that's where they're all coming from?
No, I think I bought tomato plants because they're right where I planted them.
I see.
That were just labeled Jet Star or
yeah.
Early Girl, and I got cherry tomatoes.
Well, you know, there's lots of good things you can do with those as well. I love the volunteers that have just popped up. I have the world's tiniest garden and the world's biggest tomatoes. Of course, I also have four alpacas, and so I have all kinds of really good natural fertilizer to put in there. I have tomatoes that are like softballs this year. They're just unbelievable.
Well, my garden is just doing terrific. I have a garden with my son, and we planted a cover crop. We planted ryegrass last year. Mm-hmm. We also had a load of composted manure brought in.
Mm-hmm.
And we planted early, and I don't know why our garden is doing so good.
Now, wait a minute. When you
maybe
say,
it's the weather.
How early, when you say early?
Oh, well into early May.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was just experimental because normally you would get a frost.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, if the plants die, we'll just replant. But they didn't die. They did well.
Oh, that's fantastic. I always try to get a row of peas in by tax day, believe it or not, even if I have to go chip up a row to put them in.
Well, we're doing a lot of experimenting, and I'm planting a second crop of peas. Have you ever done that?
No, I never have, and I've heard you can do that. They do okay in this heat, though?
I don't know. It's an experiment. Mm. But they still have the whole month of September, maybe half of October.
Sure, yeah.
So anyways, I'm not a member of the gun lobby.
Okay.
But I really support the right to bear arms.
Yeah.
And I think this whole gun issue is just a diversion.
What's...
To take our attention away from the really important things that are happening in Vermont.
What do you think some of the things are that we ought to be paying attention to instead?
The health care, mm-hmm. The all-payer waiver. Did that go through? When are they going to tell us about it? Mm. The Blue Cross and Blue Shield rates going way up.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital employees getting such huge salaries, the CEOs and everything.
The administrators, yeah.
So much going on.
There really is an awful lot, and the health care is a big, big issue. What do you think about, there was a report that just out of this new poll, or study rather, study about Vermont Health Connect, which, as you know, has been plagued with problems and people having difficulties getting data changed and whatnot. And they were happy to report this morning that the amount of the number of backlogged cases was down, get that, down to a mere 1,500 at this point.
Oh, how wonderful.
What do you think? Do you think we should just scrap that whole deal? Or do you think this thing is fixable? Or should we go to the federal system? Or... What do you
think? Well, it certainly hasn't worked, and we spent way too much money, and I don't have that much money to waste on something that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I guess, yes, maybe we should scrap it. And maybe Obamacare is going to be scrapped, too. Oh, I know. You like that.
Well, you know, I tell you, I think that enough people are getting some benefit out of it, regardless of how the states are administering it, that I think that's now kind of a long shot.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the insurance companies are pulling out of the federal exchanges, and that's going to leave the other people to pay a whole lot more.
Well,
so you may be seeing your bills going way up.
Well, I expect that to happen anyway, but I will say that my personal experience with Obamacare has been fantastic. Better coverage for less money than I would have paid under an individual policy, which, you know, is what I would have to do. But my experience with Vermont Health Connect, not so much.
Uh-huh. Well, did you see the story on the news where the people, their child died, and they keep getting notices that they have to renew this dead child's insurance policy, or they're going to cancel them?
It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
Did you see that?
I did not see that, but it sounds similar to another story of a friend of mine's experience with
healthcare. Well, that's terrible, but yeah. I was a care provider, and I'm still getting notices for people that have not... been in my care for over 4 years.
Oh, my goodness.
So I know these notices go out. And, mm-hmm. you know, I return them, return to sender, not at this address anymore, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm still getting notices. And it's really annoying. How come we have so much money to waste on stuff like that?
I don't know. And I don't understand why we can have a system that can't keep track of this better in an era when we, you know, routinely buy and sell stuff over the internet and, you know, and pay our taxes and pay our bills and have our banking. I mean, they don't seem to have a problem keeping straight, up-to-date information on who we are and how we choose to pay and who we're responsible for. And I don't understand why Health Connect can't manage that either.
But. Right, right. Well, I just wanted to talk about my carrots.
I'm glad you called about your carrots. I'm delighted to hear about them. And if you have other tips for what we can do with the bounty of the Vermont harvest this year, by all means, pick up the phone and give us a holler again, Ruth. Great to talk to you.
Okay, bye.
We'll see you later. You're tuned to Open Mic. That's Ruth from Sheldon. She calls in on occasion. It's always good to hear from her. Love to hear from you. What's on your mind this morning? 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. Got a favorite zucchini recipe? I think one of my favorite zucchini recipes is the rice salad recipe. You know that one, Tom? You get a big zucchini. You have to wait till they're like as big as canoes, and you cut it in half. And you chip out the middle of it, and you fill it up with rice salad, and you take it to like a potluck or a community dinner or something like that. And then when you're done, you know, people eat the rice salad, and you take the husks, you know, the emptied out zucchini shells, and just heave them over the bank. That's my zucchini recipe.
Well, that sounds, of course, this time of year, just harvest time, mm-hmm. it doesn't like fall foliage. It doesn't last long, but I like it.
I love it, too.
It depends on you know, how snowy and stuffy it is. Oh, yeah. I mentioned that one.
You do have to leave your windows rolled up when you go to church, though, or you will have all kinds of stuff in your back seat when you come out to go home.
Like leaves?
No, zucchini.
Mostly. Oh, I see. We're back on the zucchini. Okay. Very good.
Mostly. Yeah. It's you know, a note to the folks who are up here just looking at beautiful Vermont this time of year. You want to keep your windows rolled up on a Sunday.
I see.
Near a church, if you park near a church. It's just a good idea.
Being a little fiendish there.
Yeah, that actually happened this weekend. One of the things I do at home is I volunteer at the public library. And you know, each of us has like a day a month. Or some of us do like every week or several days a week. I do it like a day a month. And I absolutely love it. It's one of my favorite things to do. But a very nice lady came in on Saturday morning. Didn't say anything, just smiled. And she set down her parcels in the front, the foyer. And it was Vermont Farmers Market going on, and the Grasby Farmers Market going on, you know, 100 yards away. And so I just assumed that was her stuff. It was, you know, several zucchini and a bag of beans and a few other things. And she came in the library, and she did whatever she did. We don't actually keep track of that stuff. But she was very pleasant, smiled. And then, you know, she got done with her business, and she came up. She said goodbye to me at the front desk and sashayed off into her day. And it wasn't until 15 minutes later when I got up to go water the hanging plant out front, I saw all those zucchinis left behind on the front table there. I thought that was very
nice.
Well, I don't know. That was kind of sneaky, if you ask me.
Well, she was giving you, is that what you're saying?
She left all the zucchinis. Well, you know, I appreciate it, but I don't need more zucchini, you know.
Oh.
And I don't know if anybody in the neighborhood does. Anyway, they were still there at the end of my shift at noon time. She was pretty sly. She was a very nice person, very pleasant, polite.
We have to keep an eye out for
cheery.
Her next time.
Yeah, well, yeah. We will. Anyway, I guess we should probably stop and do a little business, huh?
Okay,
we've been babbling away here. 25 minutes before 11 o'clock, and we'll be back on the other side with more Open Mic. Good morning, and welcome back to Open Mic on WDEV. Hester Fuller is my name, with you for another 20 minutes or so, and then we're going to turn the controls over to Bill Sayre and Common Sense Radio. Today, Bill's guest is Chris Barbieri, and they'll be talking about what happens, they'll be talking about China and how what happens in China affects the Vermont economy, politics, the environment here in the United States and in Vermont. Chris Barbieri and Bill Sayre this morning on Common Sense Radio at 11 o'clock, brought to you by the Ethan Allen Institute. You know, Thomas, I look down the slope toward the tail end of this summer. I have to say one of the high points for me was WDEV night at Thunder Road. You were there too, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. Oh. And I saw you a few times. There's so many people to visit with.
I know.
People that
it was
go
great.
There all the time. And that was a great night. You had to leave a little earlier because you had a commute.
Yes, I did have quite the commute.
But the 85-lap late model feature was just wonderful.
I know it. There's just something about that place. I don't know. Maybe I mourn my lost Ute. It's been a significant portion of my Thursday nights as a young person at T Road, working for Mr. Squire, actually, in fact. So it's like I like to go there. I like to go there a lot. How much more of that do we have?
You have just one Thursday night left.
No
this
kidding.
Thursday, August 25th, and Jet Service Envelopes, who and Acura Printing, who sponsor Open Mic here, it's their night, so post time 7 o'clock, and then mm-hmm. after that is the 38th Coca-Cola Labor Day Classic.
Ooh.
That would be Labor Day weekend, Sunday, mm-hmm. September 4th, and then in October, Saturday and Sunday, the 1st and the 2nd, is the Milk Bowl.
Good.
54th.
The 54th Milk Bowl?
Yeah, H.P. Hood.
Well.
Milk Bowl presented, that is the qualifying day, and then the Northfield Savings Bank presents.
Which is qualifying day?
Saturday, October 1st at 1. That's
the qualifier.
And then the Milk Bowl is on the 2nd. So thunderroadspeedbowl.com, the easiest way to keep track of that.
Sounds
when we're
good.
Not letting you know, but we were talking about, like you were saying, maybe, what, 2-3 months ago, all the signs that spring and summer are coming,
mm-hmm.
Mountaineers starting, Thunder Road starting. And now we're on the other side of that.
Yeah.
As it happens.
Well, it's going to be a beautiful fall. We can just tell. We can feel it in the air. And sooner or later, the election will be behind us, and we can be on to Christmas, which is one of my favorite times of year. And I shouldn't talk that way, should I? I'm just taking the whole year away from people, and people are trying to savor these last
preview.
Few days.
Yeah,
well, previewing, but I don't want to also deprive people of the reveling in the glorious heat and summertime. that we're still deep into the middle of right now. So maybe we'll save our talk of fall pleasures for closer on to the fall. What's on your mind out there? Give us a call, 244-1777, or toll free, 1-877-291-8255. It's great to hear from Ruth in Sheldon about her fermented carrot recipe. That sounds like something I want to try.
It's interesting how many people agree. I just started food composting at home because we're supposed to get up to... I don't really know how it's going. It literally just started 3 or 4 days ago. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. There's something really... You know how a wood pile warms you? The old chestnut warms you at least twice, once you stack it and once when you burn it. But something about a compost pile, too. Something about walking out in the middle of January and seeing your compost pile steaming. That's reassuring and good. Of course, I have sort of a head start on composting with my little organic matter manufacturers in
yes.
the barn.
You have more of an incentive. I don't have that.
I do have that
situation.
That's true. I also have it is an incentive. But boy, oh boy, does that make some wicked good tomatoes. They're really kind of amazing. They're large, they're red, they're beautiful.
Be interesting what kind of winter we're going to have. I'm just wondering, we had very little snow.
Yeah.
We've had a very hot, humid. This summer seems similar to last summer. I remember it being hot and humid.
Well, it just seems we swing from extreme to extreme, it seems to me, in the last couple of years. You know, that reminds me, one of the kind of more poignant moments in this year's Olympics, that the Kiribati weightlifter, that guy from Kiribati, the Pacific Island nation, it's just a bunch of reefs and atolls, from what I can tell. It covers about twice the size of the state of Alaska out in the middle of the Pacific, and it's literally subsiding. The sea levels are rising due to global warming, due to the melting of the ice caps. The sea levels are rising, and his nation is gradually being inundated. And it's a sad thing. In fact, he used his status at the Olympics to issue a public letter, just trying to alert everybody that this kind of thing is happening. And the Marshall Islands are going to face that fate, other island nations in the Pacific being inundated as the ice caps melt and the water levels rise. And the Kiribati weightlifter wanted us to be mindful of that as we continue in our daily pursuits. What's your best memory from the Olympics? We had a call earlier about those wonderful runners. Oh, look, Lynette from Greensboro Bend is on, because we were talking about gardening a minute ago. Hi, Lynette. How are you?
Funny you should say. It's me and gardening, because that's what I'm calling about.
I figured you would, because that's what you always call about. But what's on your mind?
It's because I always call you about this. The rest of the week, I call about political things and whatever. But I'm sitting here boiling down tomatoes, and we just did probably 15 pounds of cabbage yesterday for sauerkraut.
Mm.
And we did that last year, and it was so wonderful. And I actually went and pulled 12 carrots and grated those up and threw them in there because it looks nice. So, but this is compost is what I want to talk about, especially for newbies, because there are things
that
if you don't know it, it's not going to work for you.
Okay, tell us what's the inside skin.
Okay, there are green ingredients, which are the fresh things, but include coffee grounds because coffee grounds are full of nitrogen.
Okay.
So there's the green things have nitrogen. And things like if you mow your lawn and the grass sits there for a while that you mowed and it turns brown, the nitrogen has gone out and now it is carbon.
Uh-huh.
But the important thing is you need 30 times more carbon than you need nitrogen.
Oh, boy, and I bet you people probably go the other way kind of naturally.
You're going to get rot if you just throw green stuff in there.
Wow.
So, and the other thing is, this is perfect because pretty soon when the leaves fall on your lawn, don't mow for a while beforehand, and then mow the leaves with the grass, and that is the perfect 30-to-1 carbon to nitrogen.
Perfect.
And your pile will be steaming practically by the next day.
Wow.
And the other thing is that the bigger your pile is, the better it'll compost. You can't do composting in a little tiny pile.
Really?
Yeah.
So like how big? What's the optimal size?
The bigger the better. And that also will keep it composting longer because it'll take a lot longer for the cold to get the center.
Mm-hmm. Is there an optimal heat that it should be reaching to kill bugs and things?
I believe it's around 155 to 170.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, I used to make yogurt in my compost pile.
Really? That might be a little more information than I needed for breakfast, but
yeah,
okay.
In a jar, of course, but just from the heat.
All right.
Yeah, Vermont has a wonderful master composters program. My sister and I used to be known as the Wacky Worm Sisters, and that's how I first called in, was about worms.
Yep.
And that's another great way to go if you want the best compost in the world in time for spring planting and seed starting. A worm bin's the way to go.
It sounds pretty good. Can we talk a bit more about this 30-to-1 ratio business?
Yes.
Now, if I have like a typical, you know, evening's pile of green stuff, like leftover stuff from my salad, vegetables, and things like that, and I want to toss it out, is it 30 to 1 by weight or by volume?
Well, that's a good question. I think if you can get anywhere near either one of those, you
okay.
You know, and I don't have this problem because all of my food scraps go in my worm bin.
Mm-hmm.
And but I, you know, as the season goes through and I'm taking down spent plants and whatever, I mean, I've got a pile that's at least, you know, not quite up to my shoulder. Mm. This is domed. It's not, you know,
yeah,
a giant thing, but by the next year, I can go and dig at the bottom of that and just have the most gorgeous stuff. And this is no turning.
Yeah, now that's the other question. I understand that it's important to give new oxygen in there.
Oxygen is real important. Okay, so it's oxygen,
mm-hmm,
moisture,
mm-hmm,
and there's always a third one, and I forget. I'll figure it out. But, yeah, moisture and turning your compost is going to make it so much quicker.
Really?
Because then, and things like I feed my woodpeckers peanuts.
Uh-huh.
So the peanut shells that when they're done,
yeah,
I throw those in, or corn stalks, things that are hollow,
yeah,
and, you know, relatively brown, can keep the air spaces in there.
That sounds like a really good...
There's a lot of you know, hollow stem things, sunflower stems,
sure,
and things. If you can run, I just throw everything in the middle of the lawn in the fall and just run it all over with the lawnmower. And that is going to give you very quick compost.
But the thing is, I think you mentioned that we should not just toss it and run it over at the lawnmower and toss it in green. We should let it sit out and dry out and turn brown
first. And people were always wanting to put cardboard and paper in their worm bins.
Yeah.
We always said the compost pile is the place for those.
Sure. Now, those count as brown, don't
sure
they?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, old paper. I mean, when I take a paper bag of corn husks out, I just throw the whole thing in with the paper bag.
Okay, but that's not 30-to-1 there. That's a lot more green than brown.
No, it's not. It'll happen.
I see.
It's just to get that perfect... heating up. Because there's three different kinds of organisms. There's the ones that can do the thermos that do really hot. There's the mezzos that do, you know, the normal procedure. And then there's the, here I go. I'm bad at freeze.
You know what, Lynette? You've already educated us way beyond.
And those
okay
work all winter. So your pile, as long as it doesn't freeze to the center, is working all winter long.
That's fantastic to think about. And boy, what a way to keep in the gardening spirit through the cold, freezing.
Yes, three.
Goodness. Lynette, thanks so much for calling in and giving us this education on compost. Tom is busily taking notes over there, and I think we're going to see some good come of that. I hope he shares. Andrea from Randolph, you're on open mic.
Hi, that was a good conversation because my first thing to mention was that I understand composting is going to become a law or a major
focus on our
waste system, right?
Yeah, I can't quite remember the timeline on that, but yes, we are going to be going to, just as we've gone to mandatory recycling, my understanding is we're going to mandatory composting over a similar period of, you know, they ease you into it. They don't expect you to start immediately.
Well, they started teaching us recycling in the 70s, and we're just starting to get a grip on it.
Well,
so
there you go.
It takes
true
a while, you know?
Yeah, it does take a while.
And also, I wanted to share that the cherry tomatoes are fantastic and easy to keep as a sun-dried tomato.
Ooh, good idea.
I slice them in half and put them on a window screen out on a day like today when it's drier, and it might take 3 days of that to dry them to where you want.
Yeah.
So you stick them in the oven at about 200 degrees for, as long as it takes, two, three hours.
Now, is there a difference between the tomatoes that have been sun-dried versus oven-dried?
I don't think so. I've done it both ways, and they both are delicious.
That's a great idea.
I take Old Bay seasoning, and I sprinkle that over the cut side, up of the tomato, and either whichever way it's drying, that gives you some great flavor.
That's great. Now, does that have salt in it or not?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I try to use it instead of salt to make flavor, so it must have a lot less salt.
Probably, yeah. I was thinking the salt might draw the moisture out and maybe, expedite the drying.
And salt is good on them. I mean, I've done that before, too. So that is part of the, that's part of the drying process. But they keep forever.
Yeah.
And you can even stick them in your freezer, and if they're loose when you put them in the freezer, they're great. You can take out a handful or two cups full.
That's great. And how do you use them in your cooking?
Oh, God. I put them in sauces. I put them in casseroles. I put them on eggs.
Sounds fantastic.
Everything.
A great
staple. Salads. You know, I use them in a lot of ways. Any place you want to eat a tomato or add filler to a dish with, pastas or grains.
Sure.
It gives you a really good texture and a great flavor with whatever you're putting it with.
Not to mention the little pop of red color, which is very encouraging at certain times.
Right.
That's great. Well, Andrea, thank you.
Good show today. Non-political. I love it.
Okay, good. Well, stay tuned and call again. Thanks very much. Andrea from Randolph with ideas of things to do with the surprise cherry tomatoes that Ruth found in her garden this morning. We need to stop for a bit and do one more bit of business. It's about 7 minutes in front of 11. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Open Mic. Good morning. Welcome back to Open Mic Radio on WDEV. We're here every weekday morning from 9 until 11. Mike Smith will be back in this chair Tuesday through Friday this week. Glad to have you along for the ride here. Tom McLeod and I have been listening and thinking about and talking about the different things that folks have had to say this morning. I love these open mic situations when we really just kind of take a cue from our listeners. And yeah, I love to have guests too. I really do. But I really like it when my guests are you all out there, because it's interesting to me to find out what you're thinking about and what's on your mind and what concerns you, what your theories are about how the world we live in is working. I like the folks that pay attention to the news that I don't happen to see and call in to keep me posted on that. Or help me take a second look at things that merit more consideration. This morning, though, I have to say I really have enjoyed the fermented carrots and the drying of cherry tomatoes and how to make good compost. I'm inspired, Tom. I don't know how you feel about all this, but I'm just ready to go home to my little 4-foot by 8-foot raised bed with its 2 tomato plants and just go to town.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And, of course, I was just trying out the composting just because in a few years, it does become mandatory for food.
Mm-hmm.
I try it out. And, of course, you go online, and there's all kinds of different scenarios.
Yeah.
Of course, you just don't have to go any further than our good friends and neighbors out there.
That's right. They know what they're talking
about. Help us get it going. So I got more ideas. It's just a little small experiment.
Okay. Now, how big a small experiment is? Do you have, like, a bin, or did you make a pile, or what did you do?
No, just kind of a bin type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And some people in the family said, that is truly disgusting what he's doing. And I said, well, no, this is what some say to do. So, but they said, start small.
Yeah, and I think the ratio that, 30 to 1 brown to green is a good idea, because you do get stink if you put too much green stuff in.
That is yet to be determined, but I can give you a report next Monday.
That would be good.
So,
tell me if it's steaming away. That'd be good.
Yeah, I'll find out shortly. All this strange weather and stuff should be interesting. Also, still, not even 60 yet, 58 degrees.
Wow, it is kind of a nice cool day. Well, I hope we snap back to a hot day. I could use it like 2 or 3 more hot days before packing it in and breaking out the willies.
Oh, I think we'll get those, yeah.
That would be really, really excellent. You know, the other thing I meant to mention in the height of our compost conversation are the volunteers that pop up in the compost pile, like the old piece of squash that you threw in the compost pile that decides it's not quite done with this earth yet and sends up shoots, and you have this glorious, well-fed, well-nourished new vine that pops up. I have something like that crawling all over my alpaca pile out back there.
It's kind of interesting. Oh, yeah, there's gardening. We'll have to do a gardening.
Yeah, and that would be accidental gardening. Yeah, accidental gardening.
We can do a harvest time one.
Sure.
Of course, then you talked about, was it you that was talking about the invasive species?
Yep, that's
another
awesome.
One?
Yeah, we could do an hour on knotweed, but everybody would be so bummed by the end of it. You'd be depressed. But or the wild chervil, that's a big deal up where I am now. And it's tricky, because when it first comes out, it looks a bit like Queen Anne's lace, but it's too early for Queen Anne's lace. And that's why you know to pull over and take a closer look at it. That's when you got to get up by the roots.
Yeah, no, all those, the ones in the waterways, boy.
Oh, boy, big, yeah.
And you were mentioning early some of those maple trees having some trouble.
Oh, I know it. The tent caterpillars are wreaking havoc in New Hampshire, and I don't know whether we're having that happen here in Vermont. I've certainly seen more tent caterpillars this summer, but not necessarily in the maple trees, you know, in other kinds of trees. Out in the woods, white pine. I got some gorgeous white pine out where I live, and some of it's starting looking like it might have a problem, but we'll just have to see. Anyway, that's going to be about it for this Monday morning. Hester Fuller is my name, and as always, it's been a pleasure for me to be here listening to What's on Your Mind, and I encourage you to stay tuned. We've got news coming up at 11, and then right after the news, we have Bill Sayre coming in with Common Sense Radio, as he does every Monday through Friday here on WDEV. Thanks, Tom, for your able assistance and your calming presence on the other side of the glass. Want to tell folks they are listening to WDEV AM 550, broadcasting out of Waterbury. Also listening, also broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush, 96.1, and from downtown Barrie, 96.5 on the FM dial, and blanketing the Northeast Kingdom from the independently owned Airways and Island Pond at 101.9. Stay tuned for news. Thanks very much for listening.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker, and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com. And you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.